Welcome to the fourth annual Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft. Bigger and better than ever.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Day five of the Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft. I'm David Locke. Thanks very much for tuning into our fourth annual Locked On NBA Mock Draft. Always the biggest listen we have every year on the podcast network. This year, we've got Brad Rowland, who writes for Dime and hosts Locked On Hawks. Brandon Kleen, who writes for Fansided and hosts Locked On Suns. And Josh Lloyd, who writes for Red Rock Basketball and hosts Locked On Fantasy Basketball on our expert desk. Chad Ford is sitting over to the side with the Chad Ford NBA Big Board. John Hollinger will stop by if we have any trades. And Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated gives us the breakdown of each and every pick that is made. On the docket, the 25th pick is the Dallas Mavericks. They traded earlier to get that pick from Oklahoma City. Brooklyn will pick 26 and 27. The Lakers 28, Toronto 29, and the Knicks will close out our draft as they made final moves as well. So that's where we sit as we move into the final day of the draft, and let's find out who everybody has on their big board right now. Brad Rowland, who are the six best players available at this point of the Locked On Podcast Network NBA Draft?
All right, we're almost to the end, but my top six remaining are Xavier Tillman, Malachi Flynn, Trey Jones, Grant Riller, Isaiah Joe, and Killian Tilly.
Killian Tilly out of Gonzaga, best name.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to call games where he's involved. Josh Lloyd, who do you got?
Tillman at the top for me, then Grant Riller, Malachi Flynn, Leandro Bolmaro, Paul Reed, and Isaiah Joe.
And Brendan Kleen, who do you have?
I have Tillman as well. We tend to be aligned here. Nico Mannion, who I mentioned in the last show. I have Grant Riller as well, Isaiah Joe as well, Leandro Bolmaro as well, and Malachi Flynn as well.
If you missed the opening day of the draft, it went down like as follows. LaMelo Ball went 1, Anthony Edwards 2, Okongwu 3, Hayes 4, Okoro 5, and Vassell 6. So you can go back and get that first episode. Then on the day 2, James Wiseman finally went 7th to Detroit with Halliburton going 8, Toppin 9. Denny Avita out of Israel went 10 to Phoenix. San Antonio grabbed Patrick Williams, and Aaron Naismith went 12. On day 3, Sadiki Bey goes to New Orleans. Kira Lewis goes to New York. Orlando grabbed RJ Hampton 15. Portland grabbed Josh Green. Pokuševski went 17th to Minnesota, and Oklahoma City in a trade grabbed Terrell Terry. That trade was DeLon Wright in the 18th pick to the Thunder for Dennis Schroeder. Let's see what John Hollinger had to say about that trade.
So first of all, I got to be a party pooper and say Dallas has to put another player in the deal to make it cap legal. That shouldn't be a huge obstacle. You can put Boban in it, or you could put Justin Jackson, for instance. Having said that, I think it's an interesting trade. I mean, obviously the perspective from Dallas's standpoint is you trade down to get off of that last year at DeLon Wright and create max salary space in 2021. And then from Oklahoma City's perspective, you convert Schroeder into another guard who is, I mean, not that much different, and you move up 7 spots in the draft, which could potentially allow them to take, the hot rumor is Alexei Pokuševski, the Greek-Serbian player who's playing overseas and is viewed as a long-term project. The one thing I wonder is, like, can the Thunder do better than this on a Schroeder trade? That's the one thing. This is an interesting trade. Like, I think it's kind of plausible if, you know, Wright and Jackson for Schroeder, let's say. Like, that's a plausible trade to do 18 to 25. I just wonder if the Thunder can do better than this on a Schroeder trade on the last year of his deal. I mean, clearly OKC is going to be trading their – they're trying to move guys like him, Chris Paul, Steven Adams, and rebuild. I just wonder if this is the best they can do.
And now Dallas is on the board. If you missed the rest of it, by the way, Desmond Bane went 19 to New York. Miami grabbed Tyrese Maxey at 20. Cole Anthony, 21 to Philadelphia. Jalen Smith, 22 to Denver. Robert Woodard, 23 to Utah. Theo Maledon, 24 to Milwaukee. That's where we stand now as Dallas gets on the board with the 25th pick and also having already added Dennis Schroeder to the roster. Let's go to the Locked On Mavericks crew and get their breakdown of, or excuse me, their thoughts on this 25th pick they acquired from Oklahoma City.
Thanks, David. I'm Nick Engstead of the Locked On Mavericks podcast, joined by my friend Isaac Harris. And the biggest need for the Mavericks going in is they just need some wings. They have a bunch of other stuff. They need wings to put around Luka Doncic, a 3-and-D wing. That was our biggest need going into this. They also needed some win-now players, so we were looking to make trades. We tried a bunch of different combinations, a bunch of different trades, but I think we ended up in a good place.
Yeah, I think the trade route is the dream scenario. I think if you're looking at Dallas, we have young cornerstones in Luka and KP. So ideally, if they could go into the draft and use the 18th pick and the 31st pick to get a win-now player, win-now vet, I think that's the dream scenario for them.
Yeah, we had some trade possibilities. We actually made a trade with OKC, obviously, because now we're at here at 25 and the Mavericks are actually at, you know, 18 to start with. But we made a trade with OKC. We had some trade, you know, other options to trade back up with Brooklyn. We had a deal where we would trade, you know, 25 and 31 for 19. That got beat by the Knicks that added another, you know, pick into that as well. It had some higher picks. We had some trade possibilities with the Suns when Denny Avdija started to fall. We were like, man, let's get back up there. And, you know, trade talks fell out with them. We basically talked to every single team and tried to get a trade going. So we had tons of possibilities, but we ended up with a trade with OKC that we really like.
Yeah, for us, we really like Sadiq Bey. We really like Aaron Nesmith going into the draft. So if we stayed at 18, that was the two guys that we really, really wanted if they failed to us. But we kind of talked to some other GMs in the network, saw that some other teams, Jake.
And we were stabbed in the back.
We were. Jake in New Orleans just had to take Sadiq Bey. So ideally, I guess we should have tried to get up to get one of those guys. But yeah, I'd say dream scenario, like I said earlier, is to get a win now player. But if we stayed 18, the dream scenario for a draft pick was Sadiq Bey or Aaron Nesmith. With both of those guys off the board, our biggest decision then was Precious falling, you know, the big man out of Memphis, he was falling. We're like, all right, not really what we wanted. We wanted a wing for our first round draft pick. So that where for us, we were sitting there watching these wings go off the board, even in the early 20s, like a Robert Woodard to Utah. But the guy that we
really, Desmond Bane too.
Yeah, Desmond Bane too. He went off the board. But a guy we really liked that we won at 31, but in this case, we have picked 25, was Tyler Bay out of Colorado.
Yeah, we picked Tyler Bay. We also, in the trade, we sent DeLon Wright and the number 18 pick for Dennis Schroeder and the 25th pick. So we took Tyler Bay with the 25th pick. We like that, you know, defensive wing. He has an incredible vertical, 43.5 inch, which I think was the record for wings. And they get Dennis Schroeder, a secondary playmaker to play next to Luka, play off the bench wherever they decide to play him. So we think we ended up with a pretty good trade there. Like Tyler, we also have the 31st pick that we're going to make at, you know, whenever all these picks go. And so we'll let you know what we pick there on the Locked On Mavericks podcast. And back to you, David Locke, who is the commissioner of this draft, but also a GM of one of the teams. I don't know how that works.
I smell something.
Good
iffy.
Luck trading CP3 now, OKC.
I really like Tyler Bay, and especially as a fit for Dallas here. I think it's a really, really nice fit. I mean, this may be earlier than he gets drafted. You know, maybe you could have gone back a little bit further. But for Dallas in this trade, to be able to pick up Dennis Schroeder and move back and then also get a player who's a really nice fit for their system, I think is nice work. You know, Bay is one of the best athletes in the draft. You know, he's really quick off the floor. He's sort of the guy, type of guy who would have been a tweener in a bad sense maybe 10 years ago. And now, particularly on a team where you have Luka Doncic and Porzingis, who are, you know, two really good players, you can kind of plug in around them as necessary. So Dallas is going to have the, you know, flexibility here to plug him in as an energy guy. He's going to give you some defensive cover. He's going to play really hard. He's going to rebound and finish plays. And I think, you know, he's the type of guy who would, if you do get him with a playmaker as good as Luka, that level of player, I think might really thrive. He's a guy who kind of flew under the radar this season, but I think he's one of the more interesting sleepers who might fall out of the first round.
So Dallas picks up Dennis Schroeder and Tyler Bay. Brad Rowland, what's your thoughts on what they just did?
I think the trade makes a lot of sense in practice, especially when you factor in that Schroeder's an upgrade. They could use a guy like that with some on-ball juice. As far as the draft pick is concerned, Bay's not my favorite guy in this class. I do think that he has some defensive appeal that could be really interesting with what Dallas already has on board, particularly with regard to Luka and Porzingis. You're probably reaching a little bit here, but again, this is so flat that reaching may not seem like a huge deal at this point in the class. So if they like his defensive appeal, I can see why that is. I think he's the Pac-12 defensive player of the year. There's a lot to like there. Offensively, I'm not sure what the path is, but you can figure that out later. You're kind of just drafting tools at this point in time. So it makes some sense.
Yeah, and you can tell Dallas likes this type of player, right? They have like Justin Jackson. We talked about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I don't know why Michael Kidd-Gilchrist came up on an NBA show. And we talked about, and they have Dorian Finney-Smith, right? So like, they are fine taking a chance on some of these defensively, athletically gifted wings just to protect Luka, I think, and to give them more depth in terms of messing with the matchups on defense. So, you know, you fall to 25 in a bad draft. I think they did the best they could.
The Bay pick's interesting because he's a 6'7 power forward, but I guess what the thinking is there that maybe the defensive ability, they can work him the way that Denver did with Jeremy Grant. The shooting is, you know, the real concern there, but defensively there's some switchability out on the perimeter. He wouldn't have been my pick there, but again, like Brad and Brendan said, it's really hard to get too down on a pick at this point.
Brooklyn's on the pick for the next two. They will have to use their Built Bar power to be able to take two picks in a row and not fatigue out. Well, probably not, but Built Bar is the best protein bar on the market, not only in flavor, but also in macros. How about this? The coconut almond is 18 gram protein, 180 calories, 14 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. That's amazing. Brandon Kleen, what's your number one Built Bar pick?
I got to stick with what I said before, mint brownie. I mean, who doesn't love mint? Are there people who don't like mint?
Josh Lloyd, what's your number one Built Bar pick?
It's cookies and cream, but the lemon almond cheesecake is it's a fast riser.
Great flavors, ever so delicious, and they're healthy. With the low sugar, low calorie, high protein, and high fiber, it's Built Bar. Go right now to BuiltBar.com. Enter in the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. The Brooklyn Nets are on the board with back-to-back picks after making numerous trades in this draft. They traded the 19th pick to the Knicks for the 26th, 27th, and 31st pick. So let's go inside the draft room and find out what the Brooklyn Nets have planned.
Adam Armbrecht in the Brooklyn Nets draft room where, for the lack of a better term, we are scrambling a little bit. Now, we came into this draft making the 19th overall selection available for a very specific reason. We wanted to find a way to get ourselves multiple picks in the mid-20s so that we could target two out of three prospects that we had highlighted on our board as being capable of being quick contributors early in their career for our roster. We're looking to give ourselves more size at the guard position. We're also looking to bring in defensive presence and versatility, both at the guard and also at the forward positions. And that's why when we looked at the board and saw that we could make this trade with the Knicks for the 26th, 27th, and 38th overall picks in this year's draft, we pulled the trigger believing that we were going to set ourselves up perfectly to go ahead and pursue Theo Maladon out of France and also Robert Woodard II out of Mississippi State. But the board now has unfolded terribly in front of us as even our third highlighted prospect in Tyler Bay went just ahead of us here to Dallas. We're left wondering a little bit if we made the mistake of not selecting our best prospect and taking him at 19, moving into the season with superstars and depth across our talent. We're also thinking about should we possibly just trade out of these picks and kick the can down the road to next year's draft, knowing that we do have solid depth and that if we decide, we can always look at the trade deadline to bring in the proverbial third star to complement the roster that we've assembled under Steve Nash. That being the case, though, we take a deep breath and we do realize that there are prospects here, though they may need a little more time to develop. And with the 26th overall pick, we select Leandro Balmaro. He's an international player that has experience, so the sample size is limited. He comes in at 6'7", viewed by us as a point forward prospect that can be a contributor both defensively and on the offensive end. He has nice length, he has a tenacity, he has a high basketball IQ. And on the offensive end, while he'll need to put on a little bit of bulk, once he gets into the lane, he'll have the ability to create his own shot as well as distribute to teammates. It is a good complement into our backcourt. The only issue we have here now is he's a longer-term prospect, and we're wondering if we've made a mistake not going after our top player at 19.
Leandro Balmaro is one of my favorite players in the draft. I love his size. I love his creativity as a passer at six. I think Levy's listed it now at 6'7". You know, he's a guy who does have a little bit of a ways to go. He's had an important place in his development now, playing with Barcelona's senior team this year. And, you know, we'll see how he sort of deals with that challenge for the first time. But for the Nets, picking here, knowing that they are a team that is probably not going to ask their rookies to play a ton right away, and having two picks in a row, you know, taking Bomaro here, stashing him overseas for a year, and then being able to hopefully bring him in as a rotation player off the bench in the next, you know, two or three years, I think this is a nice value play, particularly being able to move back and pick up extra picks.
Adam Armbrick right back in the Brooklyn Nets draft room, where we have now obviously taken our point forward prospect that gives us some size at the guard position and we believe is capable of developing in our system. The next step for us, though, is to continue to bring in size. We may not have been able to get a look at Tyler Bay, another target on our board, but it doesn't mean that there aren't options out there for us to bring into the organization. In Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan, we have two somewhat undersized centers, but that are both adept at protecting the paint as well as being rim runners on the offensive end. The only issue here is that they are fairly similar in skill set. While we consider Allen to be the more committed defensively, having seen his perimeter defense and effort improve over the past season, DeAndre Jordan is ultimately a player that we think is a valued member of this roster, but does suffer from getting lead-footed in the paint and fails to close out effectively on perimeter shooters. The other big area of both Allen and DeAndre's game is that we're talking about players that flat out do not have a perimeter shot. We want to create complementary and balanced basketball on our roster. So we're hoping to bring in a player that already has a strong defensive base to his game, but also the potential for a perimeter shot on the offensive end that'll afford our coaching staff to create different looks, creating opportunities both on the interior as well as in the corner and perimeter in our three-point game. And so, with the 27th pick of the NBA draft, the Brooklyn Nets select Daniel Arturo, center from Minnesota. Daniel will give us an immediate defensive impact as an agile big with shot-blocking ability and also has a rebounding skill set that will help us not only in creating one-and-done looks on the defensive end, but also provide second-chance opportunities on the offensive end of the court. While his offensive game is in need of development and the turnover-prone play could be a concern, the things we want to capitalize on are his pick-and-roll skill set, and then, of course, the 37% three-point shooting that he brings in from the college level. That's going to allow us to space out that floor, create opportunities in the lane for not only Kyrie and other slashing scorers, but also Kevin Durant to work within space and create opportunities out in the corners and on the perimeter for three-point shooting. And that's why we went ahead and selected him and look forward to bringing him into the Brooklyn Nets fold.
Daniel Turu, on the other hand, is not a player who I love that much. I'm not sure I see immense upside with him. Obviously, he was very productive at Minnesota, but some of that, I think, was a byproduct of being really their only offensive focal point. So I worry with him because I don't see I don't think he's a very dynamic passer. I don't think he's a great post-up player, and I think he's going to have a tougher time when – he's playing against guys who are as athletic and physical as him. You know, he's not the biggest guy at his position. So this is sort of a need pick for Brooklyn. I mean, I think there are better, more playoff-ready bigs on the board here. I would look at Xavier Tillman or Isaiah Stewart as guys who might fit what they need more. You know, Turu is more of an offensive-minded big, and Brooklyn already has scorers. So this is not the pick I would have made. You know, he's not a player who I view as a first-round pick.
Chad Ford is standing by at the Chad Ford NBA Big Board. But before we go there, let's find out what our guys, Brad Rowland, Brandon Kleen, and Josh Lloyd, have to say about the Nets' back-to-back picks of Leandro Bomaro and, I know what Brad Rowland, was it Brad or Brendan, who earlier said the guy they don't get in this is Daniel Arturo. That we'll hear about that in a second, but let's start with Josh.
The Bomaro pick is fine. I don't believe he's going to come across to the NBA this year, so he can stay over in Europe playing for Barcelona. He's a 6'7 point guard who's got some shooting concerns, but vision is pretty strong. And I'm with Brad. Like, I don't see it at all for Arturo here. They've got Jarrett Allen, DeAndre Jordan, Nick Claxton already. They're all significantly better players than Atura. They're much better players on the board. In my opinion, I think that is a significant waste of a selection.
Yeah, it was me. Brad was the one that did not love Daniel Oturu. I'll stand by that. I don't see it in the first round, and even more so in Brooklyn on a team that already has Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan, like what Josh just said. His one potential value, I will say potential value, is that he could be someone who could help you pretty quickly if you just want someone who's going to go in and rebound and fill up the box score a little bit. He won't even do that in Brooklyn, so I don't really see the theory behind that. I am 100% with Josh though on Bolmaro, and that it probably helps Brooklyn to have a guy that is not going to come over this year. Luxury tax-wise, they can sort of plan ahead, watch him develop elsewhere, and shepherd that pick. That pick I like quite a bit for them in particular, just given the situation. But, you know, I guess half of them, not too bad, I guess.
Beginning to wrap this baby up, but let's head back over to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Any steals here, Chad, in the guys that have been snatched? Brooklyn grabbing two of those, Dallas grabbing Tyler Bay?
Two of those guys are actually in my second round, Bay and Oturu. Bay right at the edge. So I wouldn't call those guys steal, though certainly Bay, who's tested off the charts as maybe one of the two or three best athletes in this draft, you certainly see the intriguing there. But Morrow is a player that I really, really like. He's a quirky sort of player. He's not easy to peg on what he is. In fact, I've had some scouts refer to him as the next Manu Ginobili, and if you watch Ginobili coming out of international play, it was really tough to peg his game as well. And he's under contract from Barcelona for another year, maybe 2 years, and so he's going to continue to develop there. That's probably my favorite pick of these three.
Chad Ford, NBA Big Board. Who's the best player left on your board as we head to the final three picks of the first round?
Well, I don't know that he's the best player, but I'm surprised Jaden McDaniels hasn't come off the board here yet. Just on upside and what he brings to the table. He had a rocky season as a freshman at Washington, and I get that. But he has so many tools. I think in this draft, he should have gone 10 spots higher.
Three picks remain in the Locked On NBA mock draft. The Lakers at 28, Toronto at 29, and the 30th pick of the night coming to the Knicks. There's some guys I know you guys like that may get drafted here. So Xavier Tillman cannot be the answer to your question because you guys have all said how much you like him and maybe somebody will get smart and draft him. Who do you think is a second-round player in this draft that's most likely to have a long career? I've got mine, and I'm certain one of you is going to say it. So I'm trying to figure out right now whether I should just say it and take it away from you. Or whether I should be a good host who allows the experts to have the floor. Since my guy's a point guard, I'll act like one as well. I'll let you go first, Brendan.
Such a gracious host. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the guys you listed, like Nick Collison. The guy that I thought of was Steve Blake. You know, these players who just, for some reason, maybe even Jared Dudley could be an example, who just stay on the court for better or worse and stick around. I feel like Malachi Flynn is the guy for me, a player who it just feels like a backup point guard right away. San Diego State last year just kind of showed everything you'd want in a guard, can create his own shot, is efficient, makes threes, pretty efficient assist to turnover ratio, has you know, just the package you want there. So, you know, I could see him going as late as the first round, end of the first round, or into the second, and I would feel pretty good about that no matter who gets him.
Well, I was a good host there because that's my guy. So go ahead, Josh. And
appreciate that.
And Brad, what do you got?
Honestly, I will say this to back up both of you. I think Flynn is almost too good for this. I think he should be a first-round pick. So with him off the board, though, I will take another point guard, and I will say Cassius Winston from Michigan State. And he's pretty much the definition of a guy with an old man game who will be like a backup point guard forever. He just plays like an old guy even now. He shoots the ball at an incredibly high level. He's one of the best shooters in the class, full stop. I guess defensively, it's kind of a concern to some degree. But in that, you know, 15-minute a game backup point guard role, I could see him playing forever and ever. Because he honestly, even right now, does not need to rely on athleticism at all. It's really just about his skill, his craft. And he's a guy who I think is going to age very well. So give me Cassius Winston.
Well, you guys took... Yeah, David, you took Tillman off the board for me, and then you took Flynn off the board for me. So I'm going to go with Grant Riller instead, a really, really big, high-level scoring guard. who played at a lower level, but those players who can come in and just can create their own shots, it's so hard to find that sort of player. And whether he's a starter or a bench guy doesn't really matter. I just think that he can carve out a pretty long career as a very, very high-level scorer.
Be interesting to see how this all plays out. You know, it's interesting so much. You go back to old drafts, and like at this point a few years ago, I would have taken Frank Mason Jr. Like there was no way in my mind that he couldn't have been a backup point guard in the league. And now all of a sudden last year he spends the year in Milwaukee on their G League team, and maybe he'll make it back at some point. But it is interesting how guys who you think absolutely have no chance in failing somehow don't get it done.
Mason had some massive numbers in the G League as well. And I think maybe if he wasn't on the Bucks and there was a team that needed that that sort of production, he would have come up and had an impact. So I don't think we ride him off just yet.
All right, let's go to the Lakers. They're on the board with the 28th pick. I know they won the championship, but I just can't call them the world championship Lakers. Here's Anthony Irwin.
The biggest need for the Lakers is basically continuing to build on their identity. They just won a championship. Their biggest need is basically make sure LeBron James and Anthony Davis are healthy. Could they add some shooting? Absolutely. Could they maybe add a ball handler that doesn't completely shock the world when they are useful come the postseason? They're more looking for additions on the peripheries, and thus they don't have a biggest need right now. Dream scenario for the Lakers, I still think, even though I wasn't able to make a trade in this mock draft setting, packaging Kuzma and Danny Green and maybe the pick, and maybe pick up a Spencer Dinwiddie. It would have to be a much bigger package, but maybe Chris Paul is somebody that the Lakers are linked to. So if they can acquire somebody like those guys, Drew Holiday also comes to mind, then great. Otherwise, I think their dream scenario was just a couple tweaks here and there. Use that mid-level and land Serge Ibaka and enter next season with much of the same identity that won them the championship last year. The main thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, when you're looking at a Chris Paul or a Drew Holiday or any of these, Russell Westbrook, though, I'd be bummed if they went in that direction. But the thing to keep in mind with all of those guys is how much money they're making. And even if it isn't from an asset standpoint, the Lakers would have to carve out a big chunk of what made them special last year and their rotation to be able to acquire any of those guys. So it wouldn't come without any downside. The selection that we wound up making here was Jaden McDaniels of Washington, more of a long-term project than somebody who's going to step in and help the Lakers, maybe not even, you know, especially not this season, but maybe not even next year either. This is somebody who the Lakers can really work on and see if they can recapture some of the potential that had McDaniels ranked as one of the highest regarded recruits entering college. Unfortunately, with so many of these Washington guys, blue chip prospects go there. They don't necessarily develop in the way that you would like to see them. And he now finds himself going from what we thought was going to be a lottery talent to now a back end of the first round type talent, and somebody who might not even help the Lakers for the next couple seasons. So, but fortunately, they have Phil Handy, they have Mike Penberthy, and they have an organization that is set out and retooled in a way that they can start to develop some of their youth in ways that they maybe didn't when Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle were all here. If they can recapture some of that intrigue with McDaniels, they might find themselves a real sleeper here at the end of the first round, something that has become kind of a habit for this Lakers scouting department.
Jaden McDaniels, for sure, one of the most polarizing players, I think, in this class. You know, started the year, teams were hoping he'd be able to sort of put his talent together and be a lottery pick. You know, now more likely to go in the back half of the first round. If he falls here to number 28, I think it's a pretty good spot to grab him where, you know, if he doesn't pan out, there's very minimal risk. And so for the Lakers, this is an interesting pick for the Lakers because, you know, they are going to have limited opportunities to get younger going forward with their picks, not having their own picks. But I think, you know, McDaniels being, you know, an interesting development guy who you probably don't have to lean on right away. He's going to walk into a low pressure situation where he can learn sort of to how to fit into an offense. I think he's an interesting pick here. I like it. Maybe he becomes the long-term replacement if they move on from Kyle Kuzma. You know, plays a similar type of combo forward role. He's very skilled at 6'9", but just has never been able to put it together in terms of efficiency and consistent production. So, you know, maybe we'll never see him do that, but maybe he surprises everyone and ends up being a rotation player. But it's hard to find 6'9 guys with his type of, like, basic skill set. And I think getting him this late in the first round is a fine pick. It's a nice move by LA.
Chad Ford said that they couldn't believe he hadn't been taken yet. Thought he should have gone 10 picks earlier with his type of body. Is anyone a Jaden McDaniel fan around here?
Not particularly. I think he's okay, but I don't have any problem with him going at this spot. I think if you're going much higher on him, you're just looking at it and going, well, the body is there. It's like, you know, and well, Andrew Wiggins can become a good defender because he looks like he can be a good defender. And I think that's almost a similar thing here for McDaniels. I'm just not sure if the decision-making on both ends is there, if the shooting is there. I think it's fine at this point, but I don't think it's a huge shocker that he lasted till he did.
It fits with what the Lakers have sort of done, right? It's like Isaac Bonga, Talen Horton Tucker, some of these no-name guys that have been at the back of their bench lately fit this mold of, you know, sort of lottery tickets. And I think McDaniels fits that.
I was going to say, he's a guy that had big-time pedigree, and I guess it would have been surprised if he fell this far. But I'm with these guys. I think especially offensively, it's kind of hard to overstate how bad he was as a freshman at Washington. Defensively, there's a lot to like potential with the tools, but it's not the biggest heist I've ever seen. It's totally fine where they picked him, but I think this is about as early as I would go.
The body is pretty incredible. I mean, he is a basketball Adonis. He's 6'9", 210. The problem is he just doesn't see. He plays, when I watched him, he played like a horse with blinders.
There's a real chance his brother is a better NBA player over the course of their careers.
Toronto's on the board. Let's see what the Raptors do. Will somebody finally take our staple of experts' favorite player? Sean Woodley is the host of Locked On Raptors.
Hey, what's going on? It's Sean Woodley here from the Locked On Raptors podcast for the 29th pick in the Locked On NBA mock draft. Let's get to the biggest need for the Raptors. That is the million-dollar question right now because we don't know what it's going to be, and it's so contingent upon what happens in free agency. Fred VanVleet could leave, in which case a guard becomes the number one need. Serge Ibaka or Marc Gasol or both could leave in the offseason. They're both free agents as well. That means a big is probably the thing you want to go for. So I think we're probably looking at a big or a guard here. In terms of a dream scenario, there's not really one. The dream scenario would be for free agency to happen before the draft, so we know exactly what the Raptors' needs will be. But that's not going to happen, of course. And that leaves the Raptors kind of playing a bit of a guessing game. I don't know if they're going to want to go for someone who's more of a developmental project because they might need a lot of minutes from a guard or a big right away, considering they might lose, you know, Fred VanVleet or Ibaka or Gasol or all three or none of them. It's tough to say. But having someone who could plug and play would be really, really valuable. If there's a big decision for the Raptors to make at this point, I think it just comes down to how confident they are in Fred VanVleet coming back. If they think it's likely they can get him signed to a deal, which I think is the most likely outcome here, then I don't know if they're going to want to go for a guard. But if they don't take a guard and then lose VanVleet, you're kind of looking at a pretty weak guard rotation, especially considering we don't know the future of Terrence Davis, who was second team All-Rookie last year and has a pretty heinous domestic assault accusation against him right now. We don't know what the future of him with the team is going to be. It is tough. I think a big is probably where you want to go here for the Raptors, just to kind of fill in, considering Ibaka, if he does come back, will be in a one-year balloon deal, more likely than not. Gasol seems like he's pretty likely to leave, maybe go back to Barcelona, nothing confirmed there yet, but it does seem like center is going to be the spot where the Raptors are going to need something to plug in next year, more likely than any other position. So that means at this point, you're probably choosing between a Grant Riller or an Isaiah Joe, or maybe even a Malachi Flynn. And in terms of bigs, you know, there's Paul Reed, Killian Tilly, Xavier Tillman. Those are the kind of guys you're looking at here in terms of the decision making if you're going big or guard. In terms of trades, I don't see the Raptors making a deal here. I think, A, they haven't had a first-round pick since OG Anunoby in 2017, so I think they're eager to kind of get another young blue chipper into the system, even if it's not a blue chipper, just a young developmental project because they haven't had one in a while. And I also think cost control is going to be really important for the Raptors right now. Getting someone who is on a rookie deal in this draft, 29th overall, who potentially can be a part of the team in 2021 and beyond, when the Raptors, it's no secret, have big plans for the offseason in terms of using their cap space on someone like a Giannis if he comes available, or any other superstar who's available in 2021. I really think they'd like that cheap, young, you know, cost-controlled asset to pair with whatever superstar. Role players are tough to come by, and good role players are tough to come by, especially when so much of your money is tied up in and a few good players, so they can get someone in the door right now, I think that would be really important for the Raptors. And with all of that having been said, the Toronto Raptors, with the 29th pick in the Locked On NBA mock draft, take Xavier Tillman, the big man out of Michigan State, the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year this past season. You can't replace Marc Gasol, but he's a guy who's an excellent passer, can work the elbows, a very good defender on the back line, would fit really nicely next to Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. And if his three-point shooting comes along at all, you're looking at a really damn good player. But even if not, the Raptors are used to having a center in Marc Gasol who only throws cool passes and shoots three times a game. So if that's what Tillman is out of the gate, I think that'd be okay. And just personally, as someone who watched Marc Gasol and the Toronto Raptors for a year and a half, I never want to watch a Raptors team without a big man who throws sick passes ever again. So it's Xavier Tillman from Michigan State to the Raptors at 29. The New York Knicks are now on the clock.
Yeah, I love this pick for Toronto. Tillman is one of my personal favorite players in the draft. I think he's a pretty good bet to be a long-time NBA role player. He's just a guy who really gets it, brings a lot defensively. I think he proved, particularly in the Big Ten, playing against good bigs pretty much every night, that he could do it. And he anchored the defense of, two good Michigan State teams the last couple of years. He's not a guy who's going to be scoring a ton. But he understands the finer points of the game in terms of screening. He's going to rebound. I think he'll be able to hit open shots. It hasn't been part of his game yet, but I think he's got it in him. Defensively, he's a guy who's tough and is going to be in the right place all the time. And for Toronto, obviously that falls right in line with some player that they like. And I think he's the guy, knowing that, Ibaka and Marc Gasol and even Chris Boucher, all three of those guys, are going to test the market. I think Tillman is a nice insurance policy that they can probably play minutes in his rookie year.
From Locked On Knicks, this is Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw again.
Alex, our third and final pick in the first round is Isaiah Joe out of Arkansas, one of the top shooters in all of college basketball, a guy who thrived on high volume, got up nearly double-digit threes per game in his sophomore season for the Razorbacks. And Alex, we've talked about it again and again and again on the podcast. The Knicks so desperately need shooting. They never seem to have ideal spacing. Last year, you could argue it was amongst the worst in the NBA. Alex, as our brilliant leader, our brilliant GM, you found a way to leave this draft with three high-level shooters.
Yeah, thanks for tooting my horn there, Gavin. I feel great about getting Isaiah Joe here. He had what you could consider a down shooting year for him this year, shot 34% from deep, but did it on extremely high volume and with a lot of attention paid to him. If you look at his year prior to this year, Isaiah Joe shot 41% on 8 attempts per game, which is the type of production that you hope he can replicate in the NBA. He's also, as a writer for my website, The Strickland, pointed out recently, Jack Huntley, he's one of the tallest players ever to average that volume and amount of makes leading into the NBA draft, and certainly one of the best players from a power conference to ever do it and ever shoot on the volume that he did at the percentage that he did over the course of his career. So we are thrilled to add Isaiah Joe to the team, adding him to Desmond Bane and Kyra Lewis, who we already previously drafted. I think we wound up with a good mix of NBA-ready talent in Joe and Desmond Bane, and a somewhat project, but one with very high upside in Kyra Lewis. Ultimately, Gavin, just to sum up for it, because we were the most active trading team in this Locked On NBA draft, we wound up starting off with picks 8, 27, and 38. In the final count, we wind up with picks 14, 19, and 30. And I feel pretty happy about how things went. And all in all, I mean, if I was a Knicks fan or if I was in the Knicks front office and this is how things went, I would be ecstatic by the end of the night. Hopefully everybody at home feels the same. But yeah, that wraps up the Locked On NBA mock draft. So we are happy to be the final pick of the first round here after a really busy mock draft. And hope you all enjoyed our trades and picks and everything else.
I think Joe is one of the best shooters in the draft, for sure. He's a guy who I think teams have questioned what his other skills are like. Here at number 30, I think New York, it's interesting watching them double down on shooters with Bane at 19 and Joe here. I don't know if those two guys will ultimately be playable together on the floor because of the defensive concerns. So I'm not sure. This might be a little bit of like a, redundant pick in some ways. But again, if you're going to take flyers, I don't think it hurts to have an extra shooter on the roster to develop. I think, for me, there's still some better players hanging around on the board here. I would look at Isaiah Stewart, who I think is going to be a good role player, or like a Vernon Carey, where they have not taken a big yet in this first round. Isaiah Joe, I think will go in the first 40 picks. He's going to be a guy who teams hope is a potential specialist, but I'm not sure if he's more than that, and I think that's the big question.
All right, you just touched on it, but before we let you go today, Jeremy, appreciate all your breakdowns. Who are the second round picks you're most comfortable will have an NBA career?
Precious Achiuwa not getting drafted is kind of wild. I'm not a huge fan of him, but I think he is a first round pick. So the fact that he fell and didn't get picked in any of these 30 picks, I think is kind of interesting. So Achiuwa is one. Malachi Flynn is another who I really like, who I think is going to get picked in the 20s, who wasn't picked in this. So I look at him. I think Isaiah Stewart is a guy who will go in the 20s as well, who I really like and teams love in terms of off the court stuff. He's just not flashy, so people don't really like. I think sometimes people who aren't like as close into, as plugged into like what teams really are thinking, it's harder to necessarily see like the through line with him. But he's so tough. And I like bigs who like know that they're bigs, and he's one of them. So yeah, I think he's way better than Turu, and I think he's better than Jalen Smith. So he's an interesting guy for me. I think those are the three. Flynn, Stewart, and Achiuwa are the three guys. And then, Vernon Carey might be a first-round pick. He didn't get picked here. I'm not, as in love with him. But I would say those are probably the three guys that I was most surprised were not picked.
All 30 picks in the first round are done. We go back over to the Chad Ford Big Board expert desk. Chad, what surprises you the most of what you've seen here?
No, Precious Achiuwa out of Memphis, a guy that might on draft night go on the lottery. Is probably the biggest surprise at all. I get it because he is a massive liability in the offensive end. But this is the player that if you were to take one player and say who could guard all five positions on the floor, Precious is that guy. So I'm a little bit surprised that he's not there. And also a guy, Malachi Flynn, point guard at San Diego State, that's really been a high riser lately on a lot of NBA draft boards. A bit of a surprise that he doesn't make the first round as well. Those are the two guys that I'm most surprised about. Overall, I think this is a really strong mock draft, though, and I think that a lot of these players, especially when we get into the 20s, there's a lot of variability between 20 and 40, and so it's a little bit eye of the beholder.
Chad Ford's NBA Big Board, John Hollinger, Expert Opinions, the Big Board itself, Tony Jones of The Athletic, our own Brad Rowland joining Chad. It's a group of experts. It's Chad Ford, the NBA draft expert extraordinaire. He's on the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes. Follow on. I'm tired. It's the end of the draft. I've lost it. I'm coming to an end. We've all been on for too long on this one. Chad, thank you very much. We appreciate it, and keep up the great work with Chad Ford's NBA Big Board.
Thanks for having me on.
We've come to the close of the Locked On NBA mock draft. You guys have all celebrated that Xavier Tillman was finally taken by Toronto. Isaiah Joe wrapping up our draft. Let's get the final reaction of the entire mock and of the final day here. Brad Rowland, lead us off.
Yeah, I will leave Tillman alone. We all know where we stand on him. That's a fantastic pick for Toronto. Yeah, it's interesting. I think this is a really interesting draft. There's some fireworks in the trades that went down. Teams going up, teams going down, looking ahead to the future. The Knicks ending up with three first-round picks and honestly making three picks that I kind of liked, which is a very un-Knicks-like thing to do. So shout out to the Knicks guys. Nothing that was like bowling me over in the second half of this draft, but at the same time, some really good value that is sort of out there. I think it's a reminder in this class that while the top is not what anybody is really excited about, there is some quality depth, and I think there are some bargains to be had at the end of the first round.
Our Knicks host and our Suns host, Brendan, which is the Suns host, really just cover the worst front office drafting teams in the league, and they're the best drafters we have in our whole thing. So it's impressive that they pulled that off. Josh Lloyd, what's your thoughts on this draft?
Yeah, I think there was some questionable picks at times in it, but it is such a weird, weird draft where there's a bunch of rotation players. And I think that if we look back at this draft in 10 years' time, it's probably more likely to have zero All-Stars than it is to have more than two, to be honest, coming out of this class. I just don't know if there's necessarily huge star upside, but there's a bunch of solid rotation to, you know, third and fourth type starters in this draft. So it is weird, and you know, committing at the top, it is hard, but there's a ton of value through the back end of the draft.
Yeah, Chad Ford has talked about how he doesn't even see a tier one or tier two player in this draft, and I think that instructed a lot of what we saw. I think the trade that'll stick with me the most is the Boston trade to move up all the way to eight to take Tyrese Halliburton. I just don't see a need for him on their roster. Not to say that I don't think he can fit in their system or be a decent player in the NBA, but that one really puzzled me. I think we should expect Boston to be aggressive because they have too many, as always, too many picks. But I didn't love what they did to consolidate there and get Halliburton. I think there were better, more exciting players for their group available. And then I guess, you know, a parting thought, you know, I thought it was interesting Avdija and Tyrese Maxey both fell. I don't expect that to happen, I guess, quite the same way on draft night. Maybe Maxey, but Avdija is a guy who's been getting buzz as a top five player lately, not falling to 10. So that one surprised me. That's, of course, the pick I ended up making. And then a player who didn't get picked and I don't even think came up once, but seems like a decent bet to go in the first round when this thing's all said and done, is Precious Achiuwa. He's sitting 12th on ESPN's board, and those guys tend to have a pretty good finger on the pulse of what happens. You know, very hyped prospect from Memphis. So a name that didn't come up, but I think fans should be aware of as somebody who might throw a wrench in things. Not a player I love, but I think teams around the NBA probably like him more.
Before we go, Chad Ford said the same thing a minute ago. Josh Lloyd, you think that you absolutely think he shouldn't go in the first round, right?
Precious, yeah. Like, I just don't see it for him. He thinks he's a three. He's an undersized center who has some significant... Look, he's got to get things under wraps. If he figures out that his role is alley-oops and putbacks, then fine. But he thinks he's a guy that can create for himself and step back threes and be the centerpiece of an offense. It's going to go pretty poorly if that's what ends up happening. And from what we saw from him in college and the way he speaks, it's about that, about his positioning and his role. I just don't see it for him at all.
Any final thoughts from anyone before we wrap up our five-day extravaganza or forever hold your peace?
It was fun. That's all I got.
Chad Ford, thank you very much. John Hollinger, thank you very much. Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks will continue his amazing draft coverage. Brendan Kleens over at Locked On Suns and Locked On Fantasy Basketball, the number one fantasy basketball show in the land, with host Josh Lloyd. I'm David Locke. Thanks very much for being a part of the Locked On Podcast Network.